Pastors go to church a lot. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It is part of the job description to be in worship. And it has been 5 weeks since I have been to church. To any church, actually. There was a gasp over there. I sat down and I did the math, and I can say with certainty that that is the longest time I have been out of weekly worship for the 6.5 years that I've been a pastor. I've never had a 4-week vacation before, so I know with certainty that that is the longest time I've been away during those years, and probably in many more years than that. I'm not telling you this to brag. Believe me. Competitive church attendance is not a sport I play or aspire to. There is no place in the Bible where Jesus asks his disciples, "How many Sundays did you miss?" He clearly had more pressing things to talk about. I'm telling you this just to underline the fact that these past 4 weeks were unusual for me in this way. I am used to the rhythm of weekly worship. It is just a part of my life. And that rhythm wasn't there these past weeks. It's not that I went into vacation with the idea to skip worship. It just worked out that way. Travel days happened to land on a couple of Sundays, family gatherings on others, and before I knew it, we were on our way back to Geneva. On the one hand, I was surprised that it didn't feel stranger to me not to do something I am so accustomed to doing. I mean, I'm convinced that if I abruptly stopped brushing my teeth, I would know the difference. And you probably all would too. But going to church is a different thing. Most people brush their teeth in the morning. That is the expected choice to make. Many of my family and friends, however, are not church-going people. And in that setting, for me to miss worship for 4 weeks was as normal as could be. No big deal. To not go is actually far simpler and a far more conventional choice to make. It's really good for a pastor to be reminded of this every once in a while. To remember that going to church is a conscious and often countercultural choice to make. It certainly is in Geneva. There is nothing in the world around us here telling us that going to weekly worship and setting aside that time is just a normal, basic, healthy part of life. It is not like brushing your teeth. It is much more like a rather unusual hobby, like rock collecting or building model trains. Huh, so you do that. That's interesting. It's good for a pastor to remember this, that you are all here because you choose to be, that for whatever reason, you want to be here. So on the one hand, I was surprised how normal it felt for me to miss worship. And on the other, I know that I missed it. I know that something did feel a little bit out of sync for me in being out of that weekly rhythm for several weeks in a row. It's not like I couldn't be a Christian all those weeks away. Of course I could. But there are some parts of our faith that you simply don't encounter, that you simply don't experience when you're not in communal worship. So instead of a what I did on my summer vacation sermon this morning, I want to give you a what I missed about worship sermon. I missed singing. Not that I didn't sing over these last weeks. Greta and I do a lot of singing in the car with two little kids. It is one of our best tools for getting through a long drive. But I mean singing together with a group. There was nowhere in these past weeks where I found myself doing that, joining with 100 or so other voices in singing, "There's a wideness in God's mercy like the wideness of the sea." And I miss that. I also missed coffee hour. That might sound a little bit trite, but I did miss it. That time when we mingle after the service and check in with one another and introduce ourselves to those we don't yet know. In that setting, we encounter people we never would encounter in other parts of our daily lives. My circle is immensely widened by the encounters that I have in this place, and coffee hour is very much a part of that. It's not technically part of the liturgy, but almost. Singing and coffee hour. Those are pretty concrete, easy to name things. But there is something else I miss too. And it's really the main thing for me. I missed being part of a gathering of people who are trying to embody something beautiful and true in this precise moment. I missed being part of a group trying to model the beloved community. Some of this, no doubt, has to do with what was in the air around me in the United States these last few weeks. The morally bankrupt behavior of leaders, the deeply divided society, the open airing of racist and white supremacist views. I heard of one American pastor lamenting that last Sunday he needed to preach a sermon on why neo-Nazi views are incompatible with the gospel. How can it be that this is even necessary in 2017? It is deeply disturbing to see these extreme and hateful perspectives out there in the open, and we have to condemn these views and these ways of being in the world, particularly as Christians. Hatred and bigotry have no place alongside the gospel. The condemning of hateful speech and actions is actually the easy part, though. The far more difficult part in situations like this one or others like it throughout the world is knowing what to do, what actions to take toward a more loving, generous, just society. All of our readings, every one of them this morning, actually point toward what Christians have long referred to as the beloved community. They all point to God's intention that people gather in loving and inclusive relationships. My house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples, says God in Isaiah, the God who gathers the outcasts of Israel and will gather others to them besides those already gathered. According to Paul in Romans 11, God intends to be merciful to all, not just to those already on the inside. And there is maybe no more breathtaking example of the hard work of being or becoming the beloved community than our reading from Matthew 15. It is a breathtaking story, partly because it is so painful to hear. A woman comes to Jesus in agony, begging for healing for her daughter. This is the sort of predicament that transcends boundaries of culture and religion and language. We can all imagine the desperation of a parent whose child is sick. She cries out to Jesus, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David." And we expect Jesus to respond well. We expect that. But he doesn't. He responds terribly. And it seems precisely because of boundaries of culture and religion and language. "I wasn't sent to help you," he tells her coldly, reminding her that he is Jewish, she is not, and therefore she should look for help elsewhere. When she presses him further, he calls her a dog. I don't know how to explain Jesus's answer here. Maybe it has to do with the fact that she is a woman and he's a man, and with the power dynamics therefore at play in their culture. Or maybe this particular action somehow doesn't fit with Jesus's sense of his mission. Maybe he is just having a really bad day. Whatever the reason, it is a hard, terrible answer from Jesus, not what we hope to hear. Thus far, the story isn't about the beloved community at all. It's about the alternative, actually. It's about divisions and boundaries and prejudices keeping people apart. It's about send her away, for she keeps shouting at us. It's about you stay where you belong, and I will stay where I belong. Thus far, this is simply a painful story about one direction that the world can take. And it's a direction that we see rearing its head these days. It's what happens next that makes all the difference in this story. The woman persists with Jesus, pressing him further, refusing to take no for an answer, refusing to let the old boundaries stand in her way. And Jesus relents. He hears her plea, and he changes his mind, letting his vision of God's kingdom grow in the process. He may have thought he was only there for his own people, but this woman with a different language and culture and background and religion showed him that grace is bigger than that, that it includes her, just as she is. This is the sort of community that we are here this morning to be. We are here to be a community where prejudices crumble, and difference is honored, and grace reaches into the furthest corners of our lives. And we seek to model that when we gather for worship. We model it in a gathering of rich and poor, young and old, gay and straight, certain and doubting and sure, from all over the world. We model it in singing together in many languages and rhythms and keys. We model it in praying for all people, even for those who are very different from us. We model it in a greeting of peace that is passed through the room to friends and to strangers alike. We model it in a communion table that is open to all who would receive Christ's presence. We model it in a time of sharing food and stories and greetings after worship. We model it in all of these small ways, these gestures toward the open, graceful, and just community of Jesus. And we do it so that when we leave this place again, we might be more ready to embody that same sort of being and that same sort of community wherever we go. Don't get me wrong, I am not saying that we get all this right, and I'm not saying that the solutions needed in our world are as simple as going to church. Of course not. There is hard work to be done in confronting privilege and bias and injustice, in listening to the experiences of others and allowing ourselves to be challenged, in making room at the table for all. It's not easy. It's not quick. But worship is one place where we might glimpse a little bit of what this beloved community that we are looking for looks like. I have missed that. I've missed going through these motions with all of you as a reminder of the kind of life that I want to live and the kind of community that I want to help build around me. It's part of how I remember who I am and who I'm called to be. More than anything else, that is what I have missed in worship these past weeks. So thank you for worshiping with me today, for singing together, for sharing together, for witnessing to something that is beautiful and true. Thank you for being a glimpse of the beloved community in this place and in this holy moment. Amen.